Lizelle Beauty Co. creates fuss-free products that work on every skin type using the finest quality, naturally derived ingredients such as wild plum or bilberry seed oil. Like us, they share a passion for the transformative power of nature, and they encourage their employees and customers to get outside to experience it as much as possible. There is a reason their mantra is naturally active. Hi Sophie, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Please can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Okay, so I'm a councillor, Sophie McGeever. I'm a councillor in Brockley Ward in Lewisham, South London, and I'm also the cabinet member for environment and transport, and I do that as a job share with councillor Brenda Dacres, and she sort of focuses on the transport side of things, pushing for the Bakerloo line coming to Lewisham and Catford, those kind of things, and I do more of the environmental side. I do parks, green spaces, rubbish recycling, air quality, climate change, lots of things like that.
So back in 2016 you became a councillor, is that right? And you were the newest and youngest member. Did you like having that brandished around?
No, I think it's just more of a reflection of how kind of unrepresentative local authorities are generally. The fact that I was the youngest person, I was 30.
Whoa!
Yeah. So it's not, wasn't that young, yeah. You know. The Lewisham, like a lot of local authorities, is dominated by kind of older people, retired people.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature of the job, very time consuming. You have to kind of juggling it alongside having a family and having another job is quite tricky. So it's just not that representative. So it wasn't that I was such a young hotshot, but
You clearly are. So do you, excuse my ignorance, do you get paid?
Yeah, so you get paid an allowance.
Okay.
That's meant to kind of compensate you for your time. But part of that's also calculated the fact that I think they say you're giving 20 hours a month voluntarily.
Oh, I see.
So it's not quite tricky to live off, I would say. But for me, at this moment in my life, I'm not doing any other work now because I've got a baby. It works quite well, mm-hmm. But it's not something I think I could do forever because, you know, we live in London, it's really expensive.
So have you always wanted to be in politics?
No. No.
How did it come about then?
I mean, I'm from a family that are like really, like very strong Labour family, like, you know, go to Labour Party meetings and, you know, listen to Radio 4 all the time. Like that. I come from a family that's really into politics, even though I don't work in politics. So I always sort of did that kind of thing. And then I grew up in Brockley. Went away for uni, lived in different countries, lived in different places. And then and that's what happened. As I kind of approached the end of my 20s, I got really, really broody. Mm. I was like desperate to have a baby.
And that feeling.
I said to my husband, "We've got to go." My husband's also from Brockley.
Yeah.
I said, "I've got to go back to Brockley." I was like, "Well, like one of those turtles, you know, like going home to lay their eggs."
That's such a nice image.
I was like, "We've got to go back to Brockley. We've got to go back to Brockley. I've got to have a baby." So we moved back to Brockley, and then my parents still live in Brockley, and they said, "Come on, Sophie, come to one of the meetings." And this was before the Jeremy Corbyn surge thing, so it was still like five people above a pub, kind of thing. So I did that, and once you show willing in the Labour Party, or in any political party, and you're reasonably young, people go, "All right, okay, yeah, good." So I sort of gradually got kind of pulled into it, and then there was an opportunity to stand to be the local councillor, and there was an all-women shortlist. I wouldn't have done it if there wasn't an all-women shortlist.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, I know probably more about Brockley than the average person.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Sort of knocking on doors and meeting people who, you know, like my school dinner ladies and things like that.
So you grew up in Brockley, and now you're looking after all of the amazing green spaces in Brockley.
Yeah, and Lewisham.
And Lewisham, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Did you like play on Hillyfield when you were a kid?
That weird metal spider thing was there when I was a kid.
Wow. Yeah. It's still there. God, it's great. Things are built to last then back then.
Well, yeah, I think there were a couple of wooden trains that burnt down over the years, but yeah, that has lasted. Yeah.
So what kind of challenges do you have, like working for Lewisham Council in that kind of role, especially when there's so much in the press about underfunding for parks, climate breakdown, people maybe not using parks as much as they should, not realising the value of parks? Like, what's it like?
oh, in Lewisham, I think it's actually pretty good, you know. Funding-wise, absolutely, there's not any money, you know. Like Lewisham, like all local authorities, we've had our funding cut by 63% since 2008. We've got half the staff we had. And if you think about that proportionally, that's, there's actually been bigger cuts in things that aren't statutory requirements like parks and green spaces. So that's a massive challenge. But in Lewisham, we've got this incredible voluntary base, which we've had for as long as I've known. So when, you know, David Cameron started talking about the big society, you know, in Lewisham, it's like, we're already doing it, mate, you know.
Yeah. So I hope you said that to him when you met him.
No, I have a few other things I'd like to say to him if I did meet him.
Just a few. We could go all Danny Dyer on him or something.
Just knock on the door of his shepherd's hut.
Yeah.
David. So what was I saying? We're talking about, oh yeah, so parks. But so in Lewisham, basically, we're really, really reliant on park users groups. So
these are like the friends of kind of
friends
groups.
Friends of groups. Yeah. They're incredible. And in Lewisham, they're amazing. So basically, what they do is they act as a kind of fantastic conduit between the council and local users. They know when something's broken. They can pick up on an issue. But they also make sure that we're designing spaces that people actually like. So you've got that kind of direct consultation with people who are using the parks all the time. And they also now attract outside funding, so they can apply for grants that we as a local authority can't, like from you know, private companies like Veolia, from they can apply for community grants from the Mayor of London, things like that. So they are bringing in all this additional funding and giving us this knowledge to make the parks better. So they're incredible, they're amazing. The park users group, you know, if you live in Lewisham, join your local park users group, get
I think
involved.
It's a really good point to make, actually, because it I think often, I guess in these times, I certainly feel busy. I'm busy doing this, busy doing that. But actually, volunteering is really, really rewarding. And like spending time outside in green space is really good for you physically and mentally. And being able to do that for the local community and to help other people enjoy that space, it feels like something that actually makes complete sense if you want to try and contribute to society positively.
Yeah, and also, you know, you can say that, well, we, you know, you can go to your local park and say, oh, actually, we chose that swing set, or we decided that those were the bulbs that we wanted to go in. You know, you get a sense of ownership over that space. Yeah. And when having a garden and having your own private green space is just like increasingly a luxury, to feel like this is mine, this belongs to me, is really, really important. Yeah. And it also means the parks are better for everyone, you know.
Yeah, I guess so. And that, in that sense, they're being designed by the people for the people, which is how it should be. For example, like I was reading about the Royal Parks movement strategy recently and spending some time in Hyde Park and places like that. And I know that they're going on like this big sort of transformation to make it more accessible. But like things like having to pay to use the toilets and stuff, like for me, that just feels like completely unacceptable in a public space. You know, people have basic needs.
Do you know what, though? So without my council hat on, I'm like, yeah, of course, that's ridiculous. But then I'm thinking budgets, budgets, budgets. Yeah. Okay, so if you're not asking people to pay 50p or whatever, you're saying, okay, we've got to fund this many people, we've got to pay them living wage, we've got to, you know, you've got to think, okay, how am I going to fund toilet attendance and cleaners if I don't do that? The model that we've got in our Lewisham parks is that we have a lot of cafes, and as part of their leases, they provide the toilet facilities and keep an eye on them.
That's such a good idea.
So you've got to think about those things creatively, but it does have to be paid for. All of those things, you know, you have to, you have to suddenly think, okay, how do we make this work? How do we fund it?
I hear your point, because I guess if you don't pay for something, then maybe you value it less.
I think we're always grateful for a toilet when we need to go to the loo.
I'm just, because I remember reading some grants for like basically how to like monetize parks in the future, especially with, you know, like the 63% of funding has been cut.
It's really tricky.
Would it become to things like advertising or billboards or like holding events? I mean, you know, like where I can't quite see.
It's tricky, isn't it? You've got to get the balance right. I mean, I think parks should be advertisement free spaces. Yeah. That's my personal opinion. Yeah. It's never been an issue that's come to me that I've had to make a decision about. But events are a tricky thing because, you know, you've got to balance the day-to-day users of the park, the biodiversity of a park, you know, the really important biodiversity spaces. You've got to think about the impact on local residents. But, you know, It's also it's not all, you know, events in parks are really fun. You know, it's nice to go to a music festival in your local park. Like, how amazing, you know. You can't imagine those kind of things happening in Lewisham maybe 20 years ago, you know, having international artists and things like that. So it's a balance, though, and it's really got to be thought about quite carefully.
Yeah, I think so. And also, just on that point, I wish I had the stat on me, but around, like, basically the value you get back from spending in parks, like reducing things like NHS bills and things like that. There is a return on investment for government to invest in parks and green spaces.
Oh, absolutely. It's really hard to value, because it's that kind of idea about having an experience. You know, you're not buying something, are you? You're experiencing something. But, you know, I think I know that people value parks in Lewisham, because they email me all the time about things that are wrong with them, things that they want, you know, things that they want changed. You know, that they are really, really valued in Lewisham, and I think, in, you know, all over London, because they're such precious spaces.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely, you know, it feels a bit like, I say this all the time, it feels a bit like Zeitgeist, whereby you've got all of the issues with climate breakdown and people feeling disconnected, and then not spending much time outdoors and, like, maybe not valuing the environment as much as they should, and then, like, seeing, like, the real everyday effects of climate breakdown affecting people, like, hopefully, like, that connection is being made, that it's related. And with people getting so excited about new parks opening in Lewisham and things like that, like, I'm hoping that, you know, we'll be building on this momentum, and everyone will be spending a lot more time outdoors and in green space, and working to preserve it, protect it, conserve it, that kind of thing. I like that in Broccoli there's a new part, I think it must be part of the Great Northwood Fourth Reserve, that's just opened. I've been invited to go and pop along and check it out. But I'm really excited. Like, there are so many of these, like, hidden spaces in and around Lewisham. Have you been to the Fourth Reserve?
Yeah, I have. It's incredible.
Is it very similar to the Broccoli Nature Reserve, the one on Vesta Road?
So I think it's part of the same chain, the New Cross Gate cutting. And it's, I mean, they're these little, so it's all along railway lines, and either side of the railway line there are these kind of these bits of wildness that are just allowed to grow. And there's been a bit of a tension because Network Rail have to kind of deal with, like, leaves on the line, trees on the line, that kind of thing. But they are these spaces where, you know, you can imagine badgers squirreling around and things like that, you know, and you can get a bit lost in the dappily light of the woods.
The dappily light is so nice. We're so lucky in Lewisham. It must be around 50% green space.
I think it's a little bit more, actually.
Is it? Okay, you'll have to tell me that stat. I'm desperate to put it on a poster and stick it around Broccoli. Legitimately. So you have kind of been, were you one of the first councils to kind of embrace the fact that we're now in climate breakdown?
Yeah, I think we were one of the first. So we declared climate emergency in February. And that all came out of a push from local residents, working with two local councillors, saying, you know, we want you to declare this, we want you to do this. And we passed a motion at local at the full council meeting. And it's incredible. Like, councils, like, we sometimes pass motions that I don't think are particularly important or impactful. But this, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's, you know, it's going to change the way we do everything in the council, because we've got that really hard target. So
it's carbon neutral by 2030.
Carbon neutral by 2030.
How do you do that?
Well, we're working that out at the moment. We've got we've commissioned, I can't remember what they're called, but some researchers to do the piece of research, basically looking at where we are now, looking at what we will have to do to get to that target, looking at the different options. And that's going to be going through, that bit of work's being done now. It'll go through our scrutiny committees, and then it will, the decisions that are going to come out of that are going to be passed in March next year, and then that will become council policy. But it's quite interesting, because it will, to a large degree, it will also be affected by how quickly the national grid's decarbonised.
Yeah.
You know, so there are things that will make it easier or make it harder. And then we've also got to think about things, okay, are we just talking about making ourselves carbon neutral, you know, our buildings, our transport, our workers, or are we saying actually our whole supply chain has to be carbon neutral? So, you know, where we get our coffee cups from, you know, where we get our printer paper from, you know, how deep into it are we going to go? And those decisions are being made now. But, you know, climate change is here, like, we're feeling it, and we've got to move quickly. And I actually feel quite hopeful that there is this kind of, there's a bit of momentum behind it, there's a bit of energy, and it feels quite exciting, actually.
Yeah. Now, as you may or may not know, we have a walking app called Go Jauntly. And because one of our main aims in life is to try and encourage you to walk more and discover new places to visit, Shane from Go Jauntly is going to take us through his favourite walks each week. You can find out more on our website or you can download the app. But in the meantime, Shane, what have you got for us today?
Hi, Hannah. Today I am picking a walk up in Edinburgh, Scotland. I haven't been there since I was a little kid and I've been meaning to go back. And there's a walk called A Dose of Dr. Neil's Nature Pill in the app, which is a pretty funny name. But there's a garden in Edinburgh called Dr. Neil's Garden, and it looks beautiful. And this walk, you sort of explore the garden before ending up at a really cool historic pub at the end. And if there's one thing I like better than a walk, it's a walk that ends at a pub. So I am going to go up to Edinburgh at some point and check this out, and I recommend that you do as well.
Thanks so much, Shane. We're just going to go back to the podcast interview now. I think one of the things of doing this podcast is I'm meeting all of like these amazing inspirational people like yourself, and I've been suffering from eco-anxiety recently, and I need to find a way to kind of make change happen or do something. And so for me, just like hearing that, I get goose pimples and I feel a bit more positive about it, because I think it can be easy to get kind of sucked into anxiety around it. Do you find yourself getting anxious?
Yeah, of course I do. But I think, you know, I want to be able to look back as an old lady, look back on my life and say, I did everything I could have, you know, because I've got a son. Like, the idea of him living in some like horrible post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland.
Exactly. Yeah.
I want to look back and say I did everything I could to stop that happening. And so, you know, it's about your personal behaviour, it's about campaigning, it's about working politically. There's all these things that you can do that can help you feel empowered. You know, lobby your friends, lobby your mum, there are lots of things that you can do.
Yeah, and it all helps. It really does.
Yeah, don't just hide under your duvet and wait for the apocalypse.
Oh God. So like, how can you've covered it off, but how can individuals or community groups work with like local councils to help beat climate breakdown? I mean, you've got things like the ULEZ coming soon, the ultra low emission zone. You know, should we be embracing that? Should we be recycling more, or what should we be doing?
Okay, so the ultra low emission zone is something we're really supportive of. We're really supportive of the expansion. So that will come to the South Circular in Lewisham. We actually wanted it to go to the whole of the borough. So basically, kind of going up to the M25 would be my preference. But it's still going to make a really, really big impact. And I can, you know, we've been doing lots of work in the council on behavioural change. But, you know, the kind of budgets that you have, the restrictions you have, behavioural change, it only goes so far. Like, what you actually need is legislation, and that's what the ultra low emission zone is. And I think all the evidence shows that it's going to make a significant difference. And I think what we're expecting, and you know what we're promoting, is not people going, oh okay, I'm getting rid of my old banger, I'm going to get a new car, I'm going to get an electric car. You can't just go from one vehicle to another vehicle. It has to be a modal switch. It has to be people start reevaluating and saying, actually, do I need a car to go to the supermarket once a week, or to go on holiday?
Do you need a car to drive to Broccoli Station if you live in Ladywell? No, you don't.
You know, like, I totally get, like, businesses, people with disabilities, people with mobility issues do really need cars. Sometimes you do really need to use a car.
Yeah, if you're carrying heavy stuff.
Yeah, but there are ways around it. And you also, when you don't have a car, like less than 50% of people in Lewisham have a car, those people are adapting their lives to not having a car.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that painful. You can, you know, and there's so many opportunities now because of, well, you know, like hire cars, those kind of things. When you do really need a car, you can use them.
So Lewisham did a trial with Zipcar, is that right? And all of a sudden, overnight, it felt like a few Zipcars ended up in and around the area. Was that in combination with you guys, like,
so,
working together?
They've got a license basically, which means that they pay for a parking permit, so they can, that Zipcars can park wherever they want.
Yeah,
and that's brilliant. So once you see a Zipcar on the end of your street, you think, actually, maybe I don't need my car.
Mm.
So we're very, very supportive of the ultra low emission zone. We're expecting it to have a really, really positive impact. We're hoping it's going to lead to a modal switch, people getting out of their cars, walking, cycling, using more public transport. But there is still a real challenge because where I live in Broccoli, fantastic public transport, you know, got the overground, got the trains, got the great buses. But in the south of the borough, you know, to about Bellingham, Whiteford, Downham, the public transport links are not nearly as good, and like it's a problem that you know that you get in all of London. The links into central London are great, but the links across boroughs aren't always very good.
That's so true.
It's really tricky. Like think about how difficult it is to get to Brixton from Lewisham, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, the P4, and that's about it.
Nightmare. P4.
The smallest bus ever.
Yeah.
It's so true. Like, I'd like to pop over to Hiver Green Market every now and again. Yeah. Or even Greenwich. Like, you cannot get to Greenwich from Broccoli, which just seems mad.
The quickest way to get to Greenwich from Broccoli is to walk, which is good.
Yeah, that's
true. But, you know, some people, that's not an option. So there is... We have to have better public transport. You know, it does really need to keep improving. And we really need to push it, which is why we really want the Bakerloo line to come all the way into Catford and Lewisham. That's one of the things we're pushing for.
Yeah, I can understand why. I spend a lot of time mapping walks for Go Jauntly, and so I'm always like trying to travel to like different green spaces and things like that. And it would be really cool if it was a little bit easier to get to some of the places in Bromley, and because there's so much green, we're surrounded by so much green space, we're so lucky, but they're still quite hidden to a lot of people. So are there any, do you have any other tips on like how individuals can work with councils to help beat climate breakdown? I think you've suggested a few.
So this whole policy shift in the council has come because local people were working with their local councillors and saying, this really matters to us, this is really important. So if there's an issue that matters to you, get in touch with local councillors, talk to them. It's also about changing your personal behaviour, how you spend your time, how you spend your money. I heard on Radio 4 today, the other day, that 10% of global emissions come from the clothing industry. 10%. Yeah. That's mad. And, you know, so it's also things about, you know, we know. So it's, you know, don't buy cheap clothes, don't eat loads of meat and dairy. There's all those things that are just part of the conversation. So those have an impact locally as well.
We spoke to Tessa from Olio recently, and their app is all about basically avoiding food waste, which feels like such an important thing to try and tackle, that you can tackle, especially because most food waste comes from the home. I think I've been guilty of, now that we have like this amazing compost bin, thanks to Lewisham Council, maybe like not feeling too guilty about throwing my browned bananas away. But she was even saying you could even just donate your brown bananas, just like load it up on the app, and then within an hour people will like come and get it.
Some banana bread fanatic will come and leave them up.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, just like using platforms like that in a community level and like helping you connect with your neighbours and things like that. I think that would be, because we've got such a great community in Lewisham already, it's just like having that extra level.
I think what's interesting, you're talking about that food waste thing, I think that's a bit linked up with the car and the weekly shop. So I wonder if, you know, doing your big weekly shop in your big car, filling your car with stuff, I think that leads to food waste as well. You can see how all of those things are connected. I think, you know, when we talk about waste, we talk about this hierarchy, and the most important thing is to reduce your waste. Don't think just because you're putting something in the recycling bin that it's fine, or just because you're putting, it's still, you're still using emissions to produce all that food, to produce that plastic, to produce that paper. We've got to just cut that, like, really drastically. Each of us has to take responsibility and cut that waste.
So you work in with the recycling teams as well. Like, have you been under massive challenges since China and places like that have stopped the UK from shipping waste over to other countries?
Has that
impacted?
I think so. I think my understanding is that it's increased costs.
Yeah, okay.
Because the places that will take that have increased their costs because there's a supply and demand issue. You know, I think one of the things that will make a really, really big difference, and there was a DEFRA consultation on it this year, is about a deposit return scheme. Because at the moment, producers don't, like, producers get to, you know, get to make a plastic bottle. They don't pay the costs of dealing with that plastic bottle. They don't pay the full cost. But local authorities who you know, we spend £6 million a year on street sweeping. And that is, like, rubbish that's produced by, you know, producers. We don't get the funding back from them to do that. So a deposit return scheme will be incredible, really, really supportive of that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have these closed loop recycling systems. That will make the really big difference.
That's such a good idea. So can we expect that to come in soon, do you think?
Well, like everything is coming from the government, it is, who knows? You know, everything, you know, all civil servants, all government attention is being focused on Brexit.
Yeah.
The amount of time...
You mentioned the B word.
I mentioned the B word. You know, so there's DEFRA consultation, what will happen to it? You know, who will be in government? When will we have this deposit return scheme that we desperately need? So many things are being put on hold because of Brexit.
I can't talk about the word without getting angry. So, like, let's swiftly moving on. So London has just become a national park city. Like, how do you think that will affect your role or change your outlook in anything that you're doing in and around the borough?
I think what I really, really like about National Park City is this sense of kind of, and you can have a National Park City, you know, you can contribute to that in your garden, you know,
yeah,
you can
that.
Depave your garden, you can put your lavender plants in your garden, you can have pollinators in your garden. So it's about like you creating your own little National Park City on your balcony. It's also about getting people more into parks and things like talking about like park users groups, getting more involved. I really, really love the idea of turning the grey into green, which is one of the things that...
I love that phrase.
Yeah, well, I didn't invent it, but it's brilliant. I think Groundwork is working with the Mayor of London on that. And that idea that you can say, OK, we're going to reclaim this grey space. We're going to dig it up. We're going to plant things, so that's good for pollinators. But it's also really, really important for adapting to climate change, you know, so that you've got places, you know, where excess water can go, preventing flooding and runoff. So I love that. So I would like to dig up more roads in Lewisham and turn them into parks. That's my dream.
I would like to request something. I don't even know if I'm allowed to. I probably should just write an email to my local councillor. Recycling bins in parks. When's that going to happen?
So this is an interesting one, because people have talked about this, and I was like, when I first became, I was like, of course we should have recycling bins in parks. The problem is that you get really, really high levels of contamination.
Okay.
So when you have high levels of contamination in recycling bins, all that rubbish gets incinerated anyway. So you get people thinking, oh, I'm doing the right thing. I'm recycling my plastic bottle in the park. The levels of contamination are so high that it doesn't really make sense. We are still looking at it. We're looking at how you can improve it, but it would be so much better if people just took their rubbish home if they can.
Yeah.
You know, I know sometimes people are travelling home, but that's the reason we don't do it at the
moment. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Not everybody respects the recycling bin.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, then I won't request that then.
Well, I mean, it's something that we're talking about, and it might be that there's in the future there's better systems to do it, but at the moment when we've looked at it,
or maybe it's the mindset, like people go, okay, yeah, this is a piece of food, I'm not going to put it in the recycling bin. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's
maybe
really tricky. You know, it's hard getting people to understand about like being quite strict and about not contaminating their own. You know, in my own house with my husband, I'm constantly taking like cling film out of the recycling bin. That can't be recycled, you know. Washing up jars, that can't be recycled, you know. And I'm doing that in my home.
Yeah,
you know?
It's true. It's
really,
it's hard.
Really hard. It's
like you said, the onus should be on the people manufacturing these things.
Because
it's no good just saying, please recycle this, if there is no way for the average person to be able to recycle something.
Yeah, it usually says something vague like, can be recycled.
Yeah, true. Yeah, God.
So it's like, well, where?
So hopefully we can lobby, single-use.
Single-use plastic, it's got to go. They've got to go.
So... just one more question. Do you have any fun plans for Car Free Day, which is coming up in September?
Well, we've really, really been pushing, encouraging people to apply to close their own roads. We're not doing any major kind of road closures of our roads, but we've got loads of people who've applied to close their roads and to do school streets and things like that. So I think it's going to be quite a lot of activities, because it's on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of activities around then, and also in the run-up to the week. But what I would say about Car Free Day is they picked the wrong time of year to do it.
I know.
Because it's really, really hard to get local authorities to get things done in the summer, so lots of people go away. And also politically, that's the weekend when all Labour people go on Labour conference. So it was really tricky to get things off the ground last year, but we got the momentum. We started doing it much earlier this year, and I think it's picking up, and I think it's going to be even bigger next year. I think it's great. I love Car Free Day. Like, you just suddenly think, oh God, look at all this space I've got, you know. Look at, instead of being squashed into a narrow little bit of pavement, you know, you can just totally take over the street.
Roam free. I quite liked it when Extinction Rebellion like took over Waterloo Bridge, and it was liberating, and it felt empowering. I was so emotional when I went and kind of showed my support. But imagine if that was like every Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, just as a start. In London, every Sunday.
Yeah.
If you don't need a car, don't use it.
Yeah, and if we took some of the space from cars, you know, they basically get to... It's like the cheapest bit of real estate in London. You know, you get to park your car there, it just doesn't even move. We need to reclaim some of that space.
I love that idea. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's really fun.
Councillor Sophie McGeever has been a fantastic guest today. Working in politics and in the current climate can't be easy. I've been really inspired by everything she's been doing to ensure green spaces are used and enjoyed by all groups. We have so many walks in and around Lewisham in the app, including the epic Three Peaks Trail, which takes in some great shops, amazing views and the best parks. Why not check them out in the app when you're next in South London? Coming up in the next episode, we'll be talking to Dwayne Fields, presenter, naturalist, adventurer and explorer. Born in Jamaica, Dwayne came to the UK at the age of 6. His formative years in the UK were in inner city London, and he was wrapped up in a world of street gangs. He became a victim of knife and gun crime. After a life-threatening incident, Dwayne made the decision to change his life forever, going on to become the first Black Briton to walk over 400 miles to the magnetic North Pole. I really can't wait for this one. Thank you for listening to this episode of Nature Bants. Don't forget to rate it and subscribe to the whole series.